This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Influence of the Dead on Destiny. This is lecture 3, entitled Our Life with the Dead, given in Dornach on December 10, 1917. As an introduction, I will touch briefly upon a few facts we have already discussed as a foundation for today's discussion. I said that the threshold between the usual physical world of the senses and the soul spiritual world lies within the human being. It lies within in such a way that in our usual waking consciousness between birth and death, we are really awake only in our sense perceptions and in the thoughts we develop. Whether based on our sense perceptions or arising within us, to make the world intelligible and alive for us, even a very ordinary self-reflection teaches us, parenthesis, clairvoyant endowment is not necessary for this, close parenthesis, that when usual human consciousness is fully awake, it cannot embrace more than the sphere of the life of ideas and the sphere of sense perceptions. We also experience in our soul the world of our feelings and the world of our will, but only in the way we live through a dream. Our dream life extends into our ordinary waking consciousness, and as feeling human beings, we are actually dreamers of life. Things occur in the depths of our feeling life that we have no knowledge of in our waking consciousness, in our ideas and sense perceptions. The waking consciousness knows still less concerning the real processes of our will life. We dream away our feeling life in our ordinary consciousness, and we sleep through the life of the will. Thus, beneath the life of our thoughts lives a realm where we ourselves are embedded, and that is only partly known to us. It is only known to us through the waves that break the surface of our consciousness. We have emphasized further that in this realm where we dream and sleep, we live together with human souls, passing through death and a new birth. We are only separated from the so-called dead because we are not able to perceive with our ordinary consciousness how the life of the dead, the forces and actions of the dead, play into our own life. These forces and actions of the dead continually permeate our feeling life and will life. Therefore, we live with the dead. And it is indeed important to realize that the task of spiritual science is now to develop this consciousness of our belonging together with the souls of the dead. The rest of earthly development will not be able to proceed for the welfare of humanity unless humanity develops this living feeling of being together with the dead. The life of the dead plays into the life of the living in many roundabout ways. It is not for nothing that during the course of the public lectures I drew attention to how the historical course of life, the what human beings live through historically, socially, and in the ethical relationships between people, really is like a dream, like sleep. The impulses that we develop when we go beyond our own personality and that are active within the human community are impulses of dream and sleep. People will consider history in quite another way when this has reached their living consciousness. They will no longer consider as history the fable convenue that is usually called history today, but will realize that we can understand historical life only if we seek what is dreamt away and slept through in ordinary consciousness, and into which the deeds, impulses, and actions of the so-called dead play. The deeds of the dead are interwoven with the feeling and will impulses of the so-called living. That is actually history. When human beings have gone through the portal of death, they do not cease to be active within the human community. They continue to be active, although in a different way than when they were active here in the physical body. We live under the illusion that our actions are our own, because they flow out of our feelings and our impulses of will, In reality, they flow right into our daily life, out of the deeds of those who have died. In our future development, it will be crucial to know that when we do something connected with our life in community with other human beings, we do this together with the dead. But, of course, such a consciousness, related essentially to the feeling life and the will life, must be grasped also by the feeling and the will. We will never be able to grasp this with dry, abstract ideas, but we will be able to comprehend it with ideas taken from spiritual science. Indeed, people will have to learn to form quite different conceptions about many things. You all know that those who are firmly rooted in the comprehension of spiritual scientific impulses can try to remain connected with those who have died. The thoughts of spiritual science, the ideas that we form about the processes in the spiritual world, are thoughts that are intelligible both to us on earth and to the souls of the dead. Out of that comes what we call reading to the dead. When we read precisely the contents of spiritual science to the dead, while holding them in our thoughts, we form a real community of life with the dead. Spiritual science speaks a language common to both the souls of the living and of the dead. But what is essential is to approach these things more and more with an illuminated feeling life in particular. Consider a few things I said yesterday. We live between death and the new birth in an environment essentially permeated through and through, not only with living forces, but also with feeling-filled living forces. This is the lowest sphere for the dead. As the non-feeling mineral kingdom surrounds us during our sense life, so a realm surrounds the dead, where, when they come in contact with anything within it, they call forth pain or joy. For the dead, it is the same as if we were forced to realize that as soon as we touch a stone or the leaf of a tree, we call forth feelings in the stone or leaf. The dead can do nothing that does not call forth feelings of joy, pain, tension, relaxation, and so on, in their surroundings. When we come into a connection with the dead, as when we read to the dead person, they experience this community, as already mentioned, although just in this particular instance of the reading. In this way, the dead come into connection with the soul of the reader, with which the dead person is especially karmically connected. Just as the dead are connected with their lowest realm, the animal kingdom, so that everything they do calls forth feelings, so are they connected with the human soul life. Whether they are human souls living here on earth or disembodied souls living between death and a new birth, in such a way that the dead person's awareness of life is either elevated or diminished through what takes place in other souls. Please understand this clearly. When you read to so-called living people, you know that they understand what you read to them, but the dead live within the contents of the words themselves. The dead live in each word that you read to them. They penetrate into what passes through your own mind and soul, Gemüt. The dead live with you more intensely than was ever possible for them in the life on earth. If we understand this fact, we can develop community with the dead. This community with the dead is really a very intimate one, intensified by a seeing consciousness. If we enter consciously into the realm we inhabit together with the dead, when you read or recite to the dead, you hear what you are reading from the dead person, like a spiritual echo. We must become acquainted with ideas like these if we wish to gain a real conception of the concrete spiritual world. Things are different in the spiritual world than they are here. Here you can hear yourself speak when you are speaking, or you know that you are thinking when you think. If you speak to or begin a thinking relationship with the dead, your words or the thoughts you send come to you out of the dead themselves if you consciously perceive your connection with the dead. And when you send a message to the dead, you feel as if you are intimately connected with the departed person. If a reply comes, at first you are vaguely conscious that the departed one is speaking, and you must now draw out of your own soul what has been spoken. This will make you realize how necessary it is for a real spiritual communication to hear from the other one what you yourself think and conceive, and to hear from out of yourself what the other one says. This is a kind of inversion of the entire relationship between one being and another, but this inversion takes place when we really enter the spiritual world. Because the spiritual world is so entirely different from the physical, and because, since about the 15th century, people want to form conceptions based only on the physical world, they displace and obstruct their entrance to the spiritual world. If people would only realize that a world can exist that is in many respects the direct opposite of what they call the true world, if they would be willing to form ideas, which perhaps appear absurd from a materialistic perspective, then they would transform their souls and have the ability to see into the spiritual world always around us. It is not that human beings, through their nature, are truly separated from the spiritual world. Through habit and circumstances of inheritance, they have become entirely unaccustomed, since the 14th and 15th centuries, to forming non-materialistic ideas. This applies even to art. Modern art can do nothing but copy from the model, from what nature forms outside. Even in art, people no longer value what arises freely out of the spiritual life of the soul and is also something real. But people cannot efface what arises freely and is effective and active in historical events, in the ethical, moral, and social life of the community, even though they dream and sleep through it. As soon as we go beyond our own personal concerns, even in the smallest measure, which we do in every moment of life, the spiritual world that we share with the dead works through our arm, our hand, our word, our glance. The dead become accustomed to the spiritual world just as we become accustomed to the physical world in the life between birth and death. While the deceased become accustomed to the lowest region relating to the animal kingdom and to the second region, where companionship arises with those souls karmically connected, either directly or indirectly, to them, they also become familiar with the kingdom of the beings who stand above the human being, I say this figuratively, with the kingdom of the Angeloi, Archangeloi, and Archai. Here in the physical world, human beings are, so to speak, the crown of creation. Many people like to emphasize that they see themselves as the highest of all beings. The minerals are the lowest, then the plants, then the animals, and then the human beings. We feel that we belong to the highest kingdom. This is not so with the dead in the spiritual realm. The dead feel themselves connected with the hierarchies above them, the hierarchies of the Angeloi, Archangeloi, Archai, and so on. As we feel, in a certain sense, that the human being proceeds from the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms, so the deceased feel themselves held and carried by the hierarchies above them. The way the human being gradually becomes familiar with this kingdom of the higher beings can be described as a letting go of oneself. Again, we must understand these things in a way that cannot be based in the physical world of the senses. In growing up from childhood in the sense world, we gradually become acquainted, first with our nearest surroundings and then with the wider world, and so on. We become acquainted with things in such a way that we know that they approach us little by little. This is not the case between death and a new birth. From the moment we know that we are connected with the Angeloi, we feel as if we had been united with them since eternity. And yet we feel we can only develop our consciousness by separating the idea of the Angeloi from ourselves to a certain extent. Here in the physical world we experience by taking up ideas. But in the spiritual world we experience by separating the ideas from ourselves. We know that we carry them within us and are entirely filled by them, but we must separate them from ourselves to bring them to consciousness. And so we set free the ideas of Angeloi, Archangeloi, and Archai. In the lowest kingdom, the deceased are, so to speak, connected with the animal nature, which they must strive to master. Then comes the realm of the souls with whom they are directly or indirectly karmically connected. In this kingdom, the dead experience the relationship with the Angeloi. The relationship with the kingdom of the Angeloi helps create a right connection with the kingdom of human souls. Hence, in the life between death and a new birth, it is difficult to distinguish between the experiences with other human souls and those with the Angeloi. Human beings have an active relationship with the Angeloi, although these things are merely comparisons and indications, just as here in our physical life our memory leads us back to something we have experienced. So do the Angeloi lead us to something that we must experience in our life between death and a new birth. The Angeloi are really the mediators for everything arising in the life of the so-called dead. And the Angeloi help the human beings in everything that they must do between death and a new birth, in connection with the conquest of the animal element. For the human beings must raise their own animal nature into the spiritual part of their being, to prepare for the next incarnation. If you grasp this in the right sense, you will say that because we associate with the Angeloi between death and a new birth, we can form the right relationships to the souls with whom we must connect. And because we enter into a connection with the kingdom of the Archangeloi, we can properly prepare the things that must take place during the next incarnation on earth. The tasks of the Archai, the time spirits, are for both the dead and the living. From my explanations, you will see that the deceased essentially relate to the Angeloi, who regulate their connection to other souls, and to the Archangeloi, who regulate their successive incarnations. But their association with the Archai they have in common with the so-called living. The dead and the living are embedded in the same way in something that the spirits of time weave as an unceasing stream of cosmic wisdom and cosmic will activity. What the spirits of time weave is history, the ethical, moral life of an age, the social life of an age. We might say that we can look into the spiritual kingdom and realize that the so-called dead are there. What they experience in this kingdom is regulated by the Angeloi and Archangeloi. What the dead experience, in common with the so-called living, is woven by the Archai. Thus we cannot fulfill any fruitful work in the social, historical, and ethical moral life unless we realize that this work must come from an element we share with the dead, the element of the Archai, or time spirits. These spirits of time do their work alternately. We have often spoken of this. Through several centuries, one of the time spirits weaves the events contained in the historical, social, and ethical moral stream of human events, then another time spirit relieves him. The moment that a time spirit relieves another one is most important of all, if we wish to observe what really takes place within the development of humanity. We cannot understand this development unless we bear in mind the living, active influence of the time spirits, and in general of the entire spiritual world. We cannot understand what takes place between human beings unless we consider the kingdom of the spirit. Human beings think very abstractly about what is social, ethical, moral, and historical. They think of history as a stream of events taking place in a continuous current, where one event always follows upon the other. they ask why certain events happen at the beginning of the 20th century, and answer that they were caused by events at the end of the 19th century. And why did certain events happen at the end of the 19th century? Because they were caused by events in the middle of the 19th century, and events in the middle of the 19th century were caused by events at the beginning of the 19th century, and so on. This way of considering historical events as the result of immediately preceding events is just the same as if a farmer were to say that the wheat to be harvested this year is the result of the wheat of last year, because the seeds remained and the wheat of last year is again the result of the wheat of the year before last. One thing depends on the other, cause and effect. However, it just does not happen without help. The farmer must, of course, intervene personally in the growth of the wheat. He must first sow the seeds, so that an effect may follow the cause. The effect does not come of itself. From a certain point of view, this is one of the most terrible illusions of our materialistic age, that people believe the effect is the result of the cause. They do not wish to form the simplest thoughts concerning the real truth of these things. I have already given you an example by describing a sensational event in the life of a human being. It is true that people prefer to contemplate sensational events rather than consider the other events that are of exactly the same kind and take place every hour and every moment of the day. I have told you how such an event can occur. A man takes his daily walk to a mountainside every day for a long time, but one day on reaching a certain spot he hears a voice calling out to him that asks something like, "Why do you go along this path? Do you have to do this?" On hearing these words, the man becomes thoughtful, steps aside, and thinks for a while about the curious thing that has happened to him. Suddenly a piece of rock crashes down which would have killed him had he not stepped aside after hearing the voice. This is a sensational event. But one who considers the world objectively and yet spiritually will see in this event one of the many that take place every moment. For in every moment something completely different might have happened if this or that had occurred. A very clever person, we know that especially modern people are very clever, would say, "Why was this man spared?" "Because he went away. This is the cause." Very well, but suppose he had not gone away and in this case had been killed. Then the clever modern person would argue that the falling stone is the cause of the man's death. Seen from outside, abstractly and stereotypically, it is true that the falling stone is the cause and the man's death is the effect. However, the cause has nothing to do with the effect, for the falling stone is quite indifferent to where the man was standing. This cause has nothing whatever to do with the effect. Ponder this matter and try to understand what is really contained in all this talk of cause and effect. The so-called cause need not have anything to do with the effect. The stone would have taken exactly the same course had the man been standing elsewhere. Nothing would have changed for the stone whether the man was warned and went away or not. I gave you this as an example, that even in outer, quite stereotypical things, the so-called cause need have nothing to do with the so-called effect. The whole way of looking at cause and effect is based entirely on abstraction. It is only possible to speak of cause and effect within certain limits. Assume that here you have a tree with its roots. What takes place in the roots can certainly be considered, in certain respects, as the cause of the growing tree. What takes place in the branches can, to a certain extent, be seen as the cause of what occurs in the leaves. An abstract way of looking at life always links one thing with another, without considering the whole. But the tree is, to a certain extent, a totality, and for a spiritual way of looking at things, it is important to become aware of the whole. There, where the outer leaves are, the inner causes for what takes place in the tree ceases. Where the leaves end, also the causal forces end. But then something else intervenes, spiritual, elemental beings playing around the tree. Here begins, if I may say so, a negative tree stretching out into infinity. But it is only apparently infinite, because after a while it disappears. An elemental existence meets what comes out of the tree. Where the tree ceases, it comes into contact with the elemental existence, which grows toward it. It is thus in nature. The plant ceases to exist when it grows out of the soil, and the causal factors cease when the plant ceases. But an elemental existence grows toward the plant from the universe. I mentioned some of these things in a lecture on titled Human Life from the Viewpoint of Spiritual Science. The plants grow upward out of the soil below. A spiritual element grows toward the plant from above. It is thus with all beings. What we observe in nature is contained in all existence. Above all, there is a stream of social, ethical, moral, and historical life present. Events do not flow in a continuous stream. One time spirit reigns for a while and then is replaced by another, then the second one is replaced by a third, and the third by a fourth, and so on. When one time spirit replaces another one, there is also a difference in the stream of continuous events. When such a new period begins, it is not possible to say that its events are the effect of preceding events. They are not the effect of the preceding ones in the way that people imagine it. There is indeed a lawfulness in the successive course of events, but what we normally today call necessity is an illusion. In the course of ongoing events, we have something similar to what we find when we look at where the tree ceases and where the elemental tree begins. In nature, a being belonging to the realm of the senses touches a being invisible to the senses, a supersensible being. The world of the senses and the supersensible world touch. There is something similar also in the course of time. Just as the physical tree ceases and an elemental tree begins, so also in the course of time something ceases and something else begins. Thus there are epochs in which old events and old impulses must cease, so to speak, and new ones intervene. At such times people like to keep to Lucifer and Ahriman, and hold on to what is actually already dead. It is possible to keep alive in human consciousness impulses and forces that are in reality already dead. This is not possible in nature. If people want to cultivate exactly the same kind of ideas in 1914 that were justified in 1876, they can do so. They can do this essentially because they can preserve what is actually already dead in the ongoing stream of human events by holding fast to Ahriman and Lucifer. It is the same as if someone were to make a tree grow on and on without ceasing after it had reached its natural limits. In the course of history, as a rule, people cannot meet a new epoch in the right way. In other words, they cannot place themselves at the service of the new time spirit. This is extremely important for our age. During the last weeks, we have spoken of the spiritually important events of 1879, the end of an epoch. Something died and ceased to exist, just as the tree ceases. From 1879 onward, it became necessary, this is of course still necessary today and will be so for a long time, that people open themselves to the ideas and impulses coming from the spiritual world. Otherwise, the old impulses become Ahrimanic or Luciferic. These remarks contain something very important. The last third of the 19th century was an important time in the development of humanity. It was necessary, and it is still necessary, that people open themselves to the influence of inspired ideas. People must become receptive to these. But looked upon outwardly, we shall also study the deeper inner meaning, things seem very hopeless. Impulses did come from the spiritual world. They came streaming in and worked so that human beings might be led beyond this point, beyond the year 1879. so that they might open themselves to inspired ideas. These were impulses that could give human beings thoughts, enabling them already at the end of the 19th century to become aware that whenever we fulfill actions of an historical, social, or ethical moral nature within community life, the dead and the angeloi, archangeloi and archai, act with and among us. These spiritual impulses were there, but went past many people without leaving a trace. Important things and important impulses indeed existed in the second half of the 19th century, as there were people who proclaimed and wrote significant thoughts. If we look at these thoughts today, they may seem abstract, but they are not abstract thoughts, and they should not remain as they were then. Parenthesis, I repeat once more that this is looked upon outwardly. Tomorrow we shall consider these things from an inner aspect. Close parenthesis. This was the case in almost all spheres of modern civilized life. For instance, in the 1850s, a man lived here in Switzerland, a man with great philosophical ideas. If his ideas had been popularized, they would have had a very fruitful, spiritualizing influence on the entire history of Switzerland. Who considers, for instance, that Otto Heinrich Jäger was an intellect of the first rank in the middle of the 19th century, one of the greatest minds in Switzerland? But who knows his name now, and who names him? Who understands that although his thoughts were apparently abstract, they could have become concrete and blossomed and borne fruit because something very great went through the head of this man, who taught at the Zurich University and wrote books about great ideas? Ideas that should have entered the life of the present. He wrote on the idea of human freedom and its connection with the entire spiritual world. Jäger wrote a kind of philosophy of freedom, from another point of view than my own title, Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, originally titled The Philosophy of Freedom, which was published in the 1890s. We could give innumerable examples like this. The most fruitful ideas germinated and greened. But what is recounted today as the spiritual history of the 19th century on into the 20th century is the least significant part of what really took place. And the most important and impressive part has not been taken into account at all. This is how matters look, seen at first outwardly. Perhaps they will look more hopeful when we look at them from an inner standpoint. The end of Lecture 3.